Following the Vietnam and Laos civil wars, many Hmong refugees settled in Wisconsin. We have the third highest Hmong population behind California and Minnesota. It is Wisconsin weekend, and Wisconsin is home to about 49,000 Hmong Americans, according to the most recent census. Hmong Americans make up the largest Asian ethnic group in our state. The Hmong people started seeking asylum as political refugees after the communist takeover in Vietnam and Laos in 1975. So here we are decades later, and we're seeing the influence of history and traditions. They're all coming through in art. We're talking about it on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're touring a new exhibit at Lawrence University in Appleton. It's called Hmong Contemporary Art and Culture. Are you a Hmong artist? How does your identity play into your art? Do you create through traditional mediums, or do you focus on more contemporary styles? Maybe you're not an artist, but a member of the Hmong community. How important is art to your culture and experience? The number is 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's meet Victoria Koo now. Her work is on display at the Lawrence University Riston Art Gallery. She's based in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and she works in ceramics, sculpture, textiles, and installations. Victoria, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, we are going to first give a heads up to listeners, that parents who may be listening with kids, the art features some adult themes of sex and anatomy. So, Victoria, you have a few different pieces of different mediums featured in this exhibit. You've made some curtains with designs. Can you talk about those pieces?
Yes. So maybe I should just preface that the pieces in this show are mostly addressing my singlehood. And what I mean by my singlehood, I just mean it's a period of time when I did not date or really socialize with people. And during that period, I was reflecting a lot on a space that is shared with everyone at the same time, and I decided it was the bedroom. And so the bedroom is a theme within a lot of my current work, and it's a symbol, it's a place where, it's the first place that we're all created, and it's the last place where we all share a last breath, and I spend a lot of time in my own bedroom lost in my thoughts. And so music and astrology were ways for me to heal and cope with some of my personal issues, and so curtains are also another imagery in my current body of work. It's sunlight is a measure of time, and windows help indicate that measurement. And I was inspired by this song by Daniela Andre called Digital Age. In the second verse of the song, she refers to lunar memorials. Mm. And lunar memorial is a burial process where you cremate the body of your loved one and then send it to a celestial object as a reminder that your loved one is constantly watching over you. And so when I was thinking about lunar memorial, honestly, it made me think about sex, because sex is life and death. It's the reason why we're alive, and it's also the reason why we will die. And so on these curtains, there are three black curtains. I silk-screened constellations on the curtains. However, these constellations are constructed from sex positions. And the reason I picked curtains is because I wanted to emulate the act of looking out at the night sky. And this piece is about cycles, essentially.
You're also a painter. You have a series that centers around experience of dating, experience of relationships. Tell us about that series.
So this painting series was, I think, a year and a half long project. Originally, there were 23 paintings for the exhibition at Lawrence University. I presented only 11 paintings. The original series title is Hello, Goodbye. Each painting has their own individual titles. And this painting theory is, it's really making a serious joke about the dating experience as an Asian American woman. And so I express feelings of being disposable. I also express feelings of inadequacy. And then I also address racism, sexism, gender roles. And then there are also some paintings that are inspired by specific experiences or events in my life and people in my life.
What is that experience like dating as an Asian American, and how has it infiltrated your art? Is it words? Is it images?
I use language a lot in the paintings. Language is the way, how I use it. I want the viewers to be very self-reflective, and the language I use is humorous. There's a tongue-in-cheekness to the paintings, and I use the humorous language as a way to just show the irony in the situation, and ultimately have the viewer question their own moral notions with certain ideas. And then the titles are sometimes used as an extension for the humorous language. And so, for an example, there's this one painting titled "Is This a Pickup Line?" And it's in the show at Warren's. And it's an online message that I received from a man on an online dating app. And he sends me this text, and I think it's Chinese character. And I respond by saying, am I supposed to understand that? And he says, yes. Are you a beautiful Asian girl? And so this painting is supposed to display the sexism and the racism that I deal with as an Asian American woman.
Do you think that your work has evolved because of the influences you have as an Asian American woman? Do you see your paintings and your other art take shape from all of these emotions?
Yes, I think my work has evolved significantly from my undergrad experience. Right now, I'm focusing on my sexuality and just gender roles. And in my undergrad work, I was focusing a lot on my family. Now I'm focusing more on other issues that are important to me that address my own personal multi.
You also have a couple rugs in the show. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, I can talk about those. So there are two rugs in the show. There are latch hook rugs, and for those who do not know what latch hook is, it's a process where you use a canvas, and then you use a tool that's like a hook, and it basically you feed a yarn through the canvas, and then the hook creates this knot so that the individual piece of yarn stays intact with the canvas. And so the two rugs that are on the show, one has the word "alone girl," and the other one has the word "never enough." And they're gray rugs. And rugs are also another prevalent object in my current body of work.
And we had to pause right there as we explore Hmong contemporary art and culture on display in the Fox Valley on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. We're talking with Victoria Q. She's based in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. She works in ceramics, sculpture, and installations. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a Hmong artist? How does your identity play into your art? We'll be back for more Wisconsin Weekend in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're learning about Hmong culture and traditions through art and the Hmong American artists who draw on their past and present to inspire these works of art. Do these works resonate with you? Perhaps you're a collector. Tell us about the Hmong art pieces in your collection. Have you seen Hmong art throughout Wisconsin? What struck you about it? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at wpr.org. We've been talking with Victoria Koo. She works Her works are on display at Lawrence University in Appleton, and she works in ceramics, sculpture, and installations. Let's now bring on Shaw Her into the conversation. She is a Hmong American artist based in Chicago, and she focuses on embroidery and cross stitch. You can also view her work at Lawrence University's Riston Art Gallery. Shaw, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, it's so funny that I would be fumbling on your name because you have a piece that says, I pronounce it Shaw, I pronounce it Shaw. Can you tell us about what inspired that piece?
So a lot of my work recently, I've been talking about my dual identity as a Hmong American. So my middle name is actually Cha, but then my first name is Jennifer. So I prefer going by my middle name, Cha. And so every time I introduce myself to people, they always wonder where it originated from. And so if they read it, then they wouldn't be able to understand it if they don't know how to read Hmong. And so I decided to create that piece that's in the gallery for It's Pronounced Cha, just thinking about how I'm always repeating myself over and over again, trying to make space for my own name, and which also coincides with how my other work talks about my Hmong identity and how we as the Hmong people aren't as known throughout the U.S.
How did you first get started with embroidery, and what attracted you to story cloths?
So I started as a painter, and as I worked through school and in my undergrad, I started looking at traditional Hmong textiles and story cloths and cross-stitching, and I just felt the need to recreate those works in a contemporary sense. And so as I was looking through story cloths, if those who don't know, story cloths are made in refugee camps during after the Secret War, and Hmong women would sew those to create profit while they're living there. And so the images there are of the migration of the Hmong people from Laos to the refugee camps to Thailand and then to the U.S. And so a piece that I have in the show is called Returning. My parents actually went back to Laos 2 years ago. And so thinking about that and how their identity as Hmong Americans as well going back to Laos, I wanted to recreate it in that style of a story cloth of their journey back to Laos and using like contemporary things like text messages from my parents while they're over there and like the airplane and such.
Text messages on a story cloth, if that's not combining the old with the new.
Yes.
How important was that trip for your parents, and how did you convey that in your story cloth?
I think it was very important, but I think they also felt very distant from when they were growing up because they were just teenagers or even children coming to America back in the 70s. But I think it was very surreal for them. I don't know if they fully displayed their emotions to us, their kids, but I definitely know they were very thankful for the opportunity to even go back to where they grew up. Even though they couldn't go back to, like, their villages, but just being overseas, and I think that was very important. But I think in the story cloth, I try to convey things that they experience with, I have sewn, like, an image of them, and you can see, like, their backpack, so it kind of looks like they're tourists in their own, in the country they were, they grew up, because it has changed so much since they immigrated to the States. And, yeah.
You have a series of work called Reclaiming Existence. What does this work look like?
So the pattern is, I made a pattern from something that my grandma had sewn. So it has a Hmong pattern on it. It is very bright. And so I have this pattern where it's printed in the exhibition is printed on a vinyl across the walls or even on the floor. And so it alludes to just making spaces for Hmong people and how we don't have our own country. And so when I was in my undergrad, I was very, I wanted to create spaces for Hmong people because I felt like since we don't have our own country, I wanted to make spaces for us. So in order to do that, I was trying to mark spaces with this Hmong pattern, making it look like this is us, we belong somewhere, and just trying to reconnect and see what home is.
Bringing that identity into your work, because, you know, this is, the Hmong don't have their own flag.
Mm-hmm.
And Victoria, I want to bring you back into the conversation. You grew up in Rhode Island. What was your experience like growing up there as a Hmong American woman?
As a child, I felt like there wasn't a large Hmong American community. I didn't have a community in terms of, like, I didn't have a Hmong community. And I think, like, through the absence of a Hmong American community, I became more curious about my own identity and culture. I became more curious when I was probably, like, as a college student. That's when I became more curious about my own heritage.
And you work in ceramics and sculpture and installation a lot. What attracts you to those mediums?
I enjoy how much they take up space and how they claim attention.
Yeah.
And I like how we get to, I like the interaction that it creates in the space.
And Shao, you grew up around Chicago, which also has a relatively small Hmong population. Talk to us about what you knew about Hmong culture growing up.
I feel like I grew up knowing some things about the Hmong culture, but I was definitely assimilating to American culture a lot, and so there was that distance from my Hmong culture and my American identity, and so I didn't grow up as in shamanism, which is what a lot of Hmong people practice, but I grew up Christian, and so I think that identity in itself played a separate role in how I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago.
Shao, why do you think it's important for people to interact with modern Hmong American art?
I think it shows what a lot of people are thinking today, and there aren't as many Hmong contemporary arts that I know of, and so I feel like right now we're, like, trailblazing our way through and trying to, as we just live through our experiences in 2019, I feel like there are a lot of things that need to be said and kind of just thought about. And so I think creating art in terms of identity helps us reconcile or even just ask more questions of who we are, and giving inspiration to other Hmong children, especially women too, knowing that this is something that they could pursue, not just like becoming something more traditional, like a doctor or even a teacher. So I think it's important to create artwork to just display our identity and
And Shao, you'll be in the Appleton Public Library for a hands-on event next week. What should people know about that?
Yeah, so it will be at the Appleton Public Library on Tuesday, and I will be leading a workshop with, it's geared toward tweens, and so that will be at 4 p.m., and then I'll be, the workshop will involve some language and cross-stitching that refers to the work that I do. And then at 6 o'clock, I'll be also doing an artist talk at the Appleton Public Library.
Well, Shaw, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And Victoria, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me as well.
Victoria Q is a Hmong American artist based in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, working in ceramics, sculpture, and installations. Shaher is a Hmong American artist in Chicago, focusing on embroidery and cross stitch, and you can see both of their work at Lawrence University, and it's on display through March 8th. Coming up after a news update, we continue the conversation about contemporary Hmong American art with a photographer who's made it her passion to support other Hmong artists. Stay with us as Wisconsin Weekend continues on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's been more than 40 years since the first Hmong people started arriving in Minnesota. Most of Minnesota's Hmong population resides in the metro area. We're talking about the influence of history and traditions over the decades with Hmong American artists. Right now in St. Paul, 13 Hmong artists are on display in an exhibit called Storytelling. Do you have a story to tell about Hmong art? Do you have a story cloth you cherish? You can join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas at wpr.org. Katharina Vang is a portrait artist and art curator based in the Twin Cities. She is the founder and president of Siam Magazine. That's a publication focusing on promoting minority artists. And she curated the storytelling exhibit on display in St. Paul. Katharina, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi.
Well, you grew up in Minnesota. How did you start making art?
The beginning of my artistry really began with the anxiety I developed probably as a kid with the culture and everything. And through my art forms, creating self-portraits was the only art form that I felt that really helped me along the way. It was something that my art teacher recommended to me, and that's pretty much how my whole artistry began.
And you found your way to photography. What's been the surprising thing you've learned when you started pursuing photography and digital art?
When I started mixing the two, because I began with Photoshop first, it was more of just how to integrate my emotions and feelings into it. And then it eventually turned into this kind of thing where to find representation. I was an artist who wasn't really confident in my work. If anything, I hated it. But in the end, it was like moving from my own face to like my nieces and nephews, because I needed different faces to begin practicing. It was more like as soon as I started doing that, I realized that, you know, I could transform my little ones into to kind of show that they are different. They are an additional to the beauty of things, I guess, because mainstream media shows Asians as just Koreans and Japanese, and I just wanted to let them know that they are also part of that, even though we are not the mainstream media definition of beauty for Asians.
What do faces tell you? Why are you so drawn to faces?
With faces, it really is showing emotion and the differences in each person, I think. I do know that I see it's creating beauty in different forms and shapes. Don't really know how else to describe it.
How important was it for you to have teachers and other artists supporting your growth and helping you along the way?
The beginning was really the lack of confidence I had. If anything, if I didn't have the teachers promoting or pushing me, I don't think I would be sharing my work to anyone or that it would be public at all. They gave me resources that I wouldn't ever imagine, because growing up in a Hmong community, especially with the arts as something not looked up upon, it was really hard to just come out and say that I am an artist, because everyone kind of wants you to be like the typical teacher, lawyer, doctor kind of thing.
Looking through your website, your photos are taken in these beautiful locations. The costumes and dress are unique, and sometimes everything is playing with light. Can you walk us through that artistic process and how you make some of those decisions?
Yeah. So I am an artist who really likes just to focus on what my current location gives me. I'm not very like, oh, I have to have this and I have to have that. It's more of what does nature give you? What is, if I do studio sessions, it's literally like, what can I play around with arts and colors to change the mood? Because that is what impacts the mood. Location-wise, I like to look at where light touches things, and that's where the photographing comes in, where you photograph it. But again, as soon as you bring it to Lightroom or Photoshop, you can change it up. And I've had the blessing to have a lot of designers let me use their art form in their fashion design and integrate it into my art form to create the final piece.
We're talking with Katharina Vang. She's a portrait artist and art curator based in the Twin Cities. Talking about her photography, she's also founder and president of Siam Magazine. That's a publication focused on promoting minority artists as we look at the influence of Hmong American contemporary art here on Wisconsin Weekend. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you collect Hmong art? And do you have a story cloth? Do you have a story to tell about a particular piece of art? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's bring in Marcus now, joining us from Milwaukee. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning. And to your guest, I'd just like to say Niao Zhong. So my daughter's mother is Hmong. My daughter's half Hmong. And her grandmother gave me a story cloth basically detailing their time from when they were in the refugee camps in Thailand to their arrival into the United States and then moving to Wisconsin, including up to the birth and early years of my daughter. I had the good fortune of being able to experience Hmong culture and experience spirit callings. I was at a couple Hmong funerals, sadly, but it was a very interesting education. The colors, the vibrancy is just amazing, and the stitch work that's used in the cloth is phenomenal. And in the process of getting to learn more about the Hmong culture, I came across many talented, and lots of times it was actually female artists. And I'd just like to say thank you, because my daughter's 12 now, and I think it's a great inspiration, and please keep up doing what you're doing.
Marcus, may I ask where you keep the story cloth?
It's stored safely in the box in my daughter's closet until she gets old enough to decide where she would like to hang it or display it or what she'd like to do with it.
Marcus, that's a really beautiful story, and thanks for bringing it to us. Katharina, what do you hear there?
About what?
Well, in terms of the traditions Marcus is bringing up and the tradition of passing that down to his daughter.
I actually really, really like that, especially if to just kind of help her with it, because, like, that's part of the reason why I created my magazine, too, is just to kind of hold in the history of yourself.
You're the founder and president of Siam Magazine, and it's a forthcoming project that is promoting minority artists. Can you tell us a little bit more about this project?
Creating my art, it helps me with my art therapy. So I decided to create this magazine, and it's called Siam because the word Siam is a sanctuary. It's an invisible circle of protection down around the body with the hand and reminds you that you are safe and loved, even in the darkest times, and that is what art is to me. So I wanted to give a platform to artists to have that. But the magazine is to pretty much give resources to artists of color, and that's because the years that I've been curating for the Kid Running art exhibit, a lot of the artists are new or they really don't know the first steps. And so I've been kind of repeating myself over the years. And thankfully, I have the experience of being a published artist. So I have the knowledge of how to submit work. And then now I also have the knowledge of how curators go through the process of selecting work, and I wanted to apply that and help them with that.
How do you plan to include traditional Hmong art in your work, in your series of photos?
So the way I want to kind of push it towards is having all artists through all mediums of work. And eventually, because there's a plan to have an issue based on just Hmong artists, and I really want to bring the older folks, and that's like saying like my mom or great grandma or whoever, because they are the ones who had to go through this process of learning cross stitching, and I want to kind of just go back into culture and just be like, this is where our beginning artistry was, because back in last week, and I'm not sure about this, but I do know that most of the time the elders, they went through cross-stitching simply because that was their art form and that was their form of making money.
We're talking about the modern and traditional influences of Hmong American art that's on display right now in Wisconsin and Minnesota. Katharina Vang is our guide. Traditionally, Hmong passed down their history orally or through story cloths, as we've been talking about. But a new generation of Hmong Americans is taking traditions in new ways. We're talking about it on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. The Hmong American experience is often viewed through the lens of history due to many Hmong people being first or second generation political refugees, and that they are seen as a people without a country. We're discussing modern Hmong American culture through art and expression with contemporary Hmong American artists on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Have you seen Hmong art on display? What struck you about it? Are you familiar with story cloths? What do you appreciate about that kind of art? And maybe you're not an artist, but a member of the Hmong community. How important is art to your culture and experience? Join in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Katharina Vang is our guide. She's a portrait artist and art curator. She curated an exhibit in St. Paul right now that's featuring 13 Hmong American artists. Katharina, you curated this Kia Danging art exhibit and film festival. What kind of art does this project feature?
As of the moment, there is a small portion of photography, but most of it is traditional art.
And what are the traditional art pieces saying? What are some of these stories?
It has, many of the stories have ranged. We have a lot of new beginners or artists who haven't exhibited their work before. So it is a lot of stories based on the history that they were told by their family. And then it kind of goes all around in a circle to where, kind of like the history, it shows the beginning where it's the roots of what the culture is. And then it kind of does this merge of what is art now to them, or you can see the artists who are more, that have spent more time on their artistry or knows the art field a little bit more, how they've kind of gone from this is my culture to this is me in my culture, or this is me with my culture as a part of me, but we're focusing on me as an individual now.
How important is storytelling to the Hmong experience?
I definitely think it is. Storytelling, not only is it just our culture, but it is a piece of who we are. I think that is also like a huge piece of an artist in general. The reason why we keep on creating is because we want to show people that this is who we are, and kind of, I mean, maybe be accepted by that. I know that's a large form of why I create. And so applying, I would like to share that with the artists. And most of the time when we do talk about art, it is literally just finding a place to belong.
A place to belong. What have you learned since you began curating art? How has that helped you grow artistically?
It has made me learn how to see different views and aspects from individuals. I am very, very thankful to the opportunity, as I don't think I really understood the process much when I first began and how important it was to continue showing art, especially through Hmong artists, or the requirements are not that you have to be Hmong, but even if you are interested in the Hmong culture and you're fascinated by it, you may create art based on it too and submit. And I think that was the one thing I enjoyed the most, because yes, we do have artists in our culture who create the artwork, but to see how we are portrayed through other artists of other ethnicities and cultures was even more interesting in my way, because they don't just see us how we see ourselves, how we are kind of lost, and we don't have a place to call our own, that we have to create our own stuff or our own space to belong, but they see us as who, or maybe as an inspiration kind of thing.
And so in the last couple seconds we have left it to you, what is next? Where do you go next with your art?
For me, I love portrait photography, so I'm probably going to stay there, but I definitely am pushing out my magazine to promote artists, whether that's beginner artists or advanced artists. I just want a platform to help artists, as I've been helped by my teachers.
Well, Katharina, thank you so much for joining us.
Mm-hmm.
Katharina Vang is a portrait artist and art curator in the Twin Cities, founder and president of Siam Magazine. Earlier, we talked with Victoria Koo and Cha Her, whose art is on display at Lawrence University through March 8th. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a musical poem.
January is National Polka Month, and what better place to commemorate this iconic sound than in Wisconsin, where the polka is our state dance. To celebrate, poet Susan Fearer shares a poem about her sister's accordion and her mother's irritation. It's called 1956, the year my sister, using her ill health once again, blackmailed my parents into an accordion.
My mother even hated the name of the store where she had to pick it up. Low Duca Brothers. She waited until dark to smuggle it from our old holiday trunk into our house. To my mother, the accordion was an immigrant, one of my father's relatives, one that didn't speak English, one that was pierogi fat, that wore a babushka and anklets to church, one she thought she had talked him out of writing to. My sister would go out on my parents' suburban front lawn between the maple and chinaberry tree on the even, green, Bay Ridge, well-watered lawn and practice Lady of Spain. My mother imagined the clouds above her house taking Lawrence Welk cutout shapes at Rain Kolakis. Frankie Yankovic was at her door. The neighbors knew. My mother hoped my sister would abandon the accordion as quickly as she did her charm school, her twirling, her water ballet, and Mamie Eisenhower scrapbook. My mother dreamt the six fat Dutchmen heard all about her sick daughter and came and taught her the two fat polka. All my father's unrecognized relatives came from Czechoslovakia to see the six fat Dutchmen and do the Slovenian twirl in twilight under plastic electric Chinese lanterns strung around my parents' newly landscaped suburban lot. My mother bribed my sister away from her accordion with a trip to New York to visit Uncle Jack, a professor who taught labor relations at Cornell. It was what my sister wanted all along. The accordion was her wardrobe door to Narnia, New York. While they were gone, the accordion sat alone as the night convent of St. Mary of Częstochowa. The accordion had rows of nubs of wonderful black buttons. I wasn't big enough to carry it. It was beauty. I imagined it vast and pearl as a confessional, gay as a polka fest. I sat next to it. I heard my sister's silent accordion stop playing the past. It began playing music I didn't know yet. Years later, I'd call it Zydeco and dance to it on sweet, full summer nights on side city streets of the future with holy card beautiful men who loved nothing more than a woman with an ear for a good accordion and all the musics one can make.
Susan Fearer is the former poet laureate of Milwaukee and the author of many books, including Milwaukee Does Strange Things to People. And if you want more accordion in your life, check out Wisconsin Public Television's recent story, Accordion is All in the Family. It's about lifelong accordion player Ruth Marty, her bandmate and granddaughter, Sarah, and an annual concert they host in New Glarus. You can find that story at wisconsinlife.org. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.